This week on RSVNB Update, sigils are reworked to be abilities, but stuff happened. We detail the Clan Cup and give thoughts on its new format, plus a discussion on new players and a different way of balancing the game. This is RSVNB Update, episode 738, recorded Thursday, August 22nd, 2019. BYOB, bring your own bugs. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVNB Update this week. Just Tanis and myself sitting in, observing the wreckage from afar.
Wow. It looks like... Is that a dumpster on fire, Shane?
It was.
I think so.
And it's through no fault of our own. It's, you know, I want to also just get in front of the stampede on this one, because I know there's a... There was a big kerfuffle about this, and it even came up on the live stream this week. Mod Shawnee mentioned that it is kind of demoralizing sometimes to take the brunt of these things for the community. But nonetheless, I think we need to be clear in going on this that this week the community management team didn't deserve any of the heat to be foisted upon themselves in terms of what happened. But... in any case, welcome to another episode of RSVNB Update. Not too much to talk about update-wise this week in terms of headliners. If you look at the headliner this week, it's Clan Cup, Big Game Hunter. The subsequent update, though, the one that should have been the headliner, is the sigil removal.
Oh, that rings a bell. I think I heard something about that this week.
And, you know, I think this was supposed to be an update that kind of came in the quiet of night. But to be honest, it didn't. So just to recap for anybody wondering what this was, back in 2017, the sigil slot was added to your character. And up until then, they made around, I think, 10 or 11 sigils only. And as a result, you know... they really didn't add much more onto them, and there was lots of confusion between them, pocket slots, and how they all interacted with whatnot. So they said that the sigils required upkeep, they couldn't be stacked, and were in general a hassle to use. Therefore, the sigil system and appropriate slot has been removed, and they've been turned into abilities. We talked about this 2 weeks ago on the podcast when David was on and went through a number of the changes that came forward with this one. And, you know, let's just go through what was done with this. So a few of the sigils have been renamed to better reflect the bonuses they provide. So Sigil of Slaying is now Slayer's Insight. Ferocious is now known as Curadel's Favor. And the function of the rest of the abilities has not changed in terms of what they provide to the player and what they provide in terms of benefits. And as we talked about on that update 2 weeks ago, they can be put on your action bar, and when you use them on your action bar, you can stack their effects together. And also with that, no global cooldown. That was something that was an initial oversight and was removed, and I think patched in, and they had a commitment of doing that by the following Tuesday after that. And also a couple of balance changes with this. They say because sigil effects are now abilities that do not share a cooldown, abilities that provide consistent XP gain have been rebalanced. So the cooldown of Slayer's Insight has been increased to 2 minutes, and the cooldown of Aggression has been increased to 2 minutes as well. And this is where the story on the news post stops. And what happened in-game takes on an entirely different beast, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And I think a lot of people were already primed for this to maybe not go well.
And, you know, I was thinking the exact same thing, because we had the issue with global cooldown that had to be looked at.
Right. So, I mean, this was gasoline on the fire. I think, look, there's a lot of bugs. I mean,
yeah.
Period.
Like I'm not gonna go through all the bugs because I mean most of these have been patched, but just to name a few that were available on you don't want a bug to be available, but in game on the Monday, compressed anima, which was destined to be traded between players, was untradeable. Onslaught didn't critical hit anymore. Barge would no longer be affected by mobile. The Lent item box in the Grand Exchange is still kind of wonky with its background effect. Reprisal was removed completely from the game.
Mm-hmm.
Spamming Ingenuity of Humans would have given you adrenaline without the use of abilities. Just to name a few.
And just to name
I want to just clarify in what we're talking about now, the majority of these have been either hot fixed or cold fixed by the time we're recording this and by the time you guys are listening to this.
Right. Well, and it was also spamming an announcement. As soon as you would teleport anywhere, the bank would crash on mobile. Like if you opened the bank, the whole thing would shut down.
Yeah, that one's still one's still out there, and that's from what I understand it. Going to be fixed in a bit of time because that's on the mobile team.
Right. So, I mean, in my view, we know that bugs are a thing, right?
Yeah.
But there were a lot of game breakers, and that's what made this one different.
Right. And I have a theory as to why most of these are so game breaking. Typically, when you are adding stuff to a game, it's no big deal because your player model, your player instance, the portion of storage somewhere on a Jagex server that controls your character doesn't have new associations with the new content that comes in. But if you're going to be removing things that are associated with your character, whether they be items directly from your bank or charges that your character might have or components that your character might have, and you remove these, you know, in a game that is as wide and as expansive as RuneScape, it is not unfeasible to pull on one thing and have something else come undone entirely. And this is not justification for shipping a broken update, but this is a reason to people as to how something like this could happen. And I think if you talk to anybody at Jagex, they will say that stuff like this should not happen. I say it should not happen. It's generally not good practice to ship something that breaks. Now, with that being said, when it comes down to it, there's two things that we can learn from this, and you know, maybe this will be something that is indeed possible at some point in the future. I don't know if it will be because of just how expansive RuneScape is and the amount of storage it takes to, you know, store all the characters, store everyone's items, and store everyone's save state, let's just call it. But in general, when you ship an update, whether it be to something like RuneScape or another game, or even to a website like we do with RSBNB, if you have something that breaks the website or breaks the application, it's often better at times just to go backwards in time to a previous revision of the code base. Most code management solutions do that. And, you know, this is saying something that the players might or might not understand. And at the core of the matter is Jagex probably does use a proprietary code management solution. So that's one side of it. And then it's also just the huge save states that I mentioned. And I think what would be nice, and I know I'm saying this and it's probably unfeasible, would be to see if at some point in the future, if there's a major game-breaking bug update like this, if the whole thing can just be pulled back.
Yeah. So in layman's terms, you're talking about rolling it back.
Right.
Just to do a rollback.
Right. But the thing is, I'm not sure that's feasible with RuneScape, given how expansive player save states are.
Okay. If that's not possible, then I think one way to not get into this situation in the future is we obviously have a
beta server up right now.
Right now. And if there was any doubt, just a 0.5% doubt that any one of these bugs could have happened. I don't see any harm in releasing this into the beta. Now, I'm not saying you beta test every single update, but if you have a beta up and you have an update that is essentially a combat update, why not run it through that first? It would have saved a lot of grief in the end. You know, and I mean, and of course, we're Monday morning quarterbacking, and you know, yeah. I understand that
we don't know how it works inside.
Right. The first thing I want to say is just that there is no way to sugarcoat this. There is no way to spin this. This was a mistake, and I think the best thing you can do when something like this happens is to come out and say, "We made a mistake. We're either going to roll it back or we're trying to fix it as quickly as we can. We are aware of all of your problems. Please let us know." And I think they did that to a certain extent, but you really have to own up that, hey, we messed up. As a community, we need to realize that my Johnny didn't have nothing to do with it. He's our go-between. You know what I'm saying? Like that... You need to have a little bit of awareness of how your actions can affect someone else. He even put out a tweet that the only demotivating thing for him was everyone coming at him personally.
Yeah.
I felt bad for him for that. You know, I was like, that's not right. That's not right. But at the same time, now I understand people were hot. I think they had a right to be hot. I think they did, you know, Jankix did mess up in this situation, but there wasn't any reason to go after them. And this, the very last thing is that when you see this stuff happening and you start seeing the memes going around, I want you to remember that while Jankix ends up being the butt of the joke, a lot of people are performing for each other. They might be using Jankix as the butt of the joke because, that's funny.
Yeah.
But they're performing for each other.
Exactly. And I just want to say it's really easy, even in the sense of a limited website like our website, RSVNB, to ship something that completely breaks. Like, for example, once upon a time, I accidentally deleted summoning from our high scores.
Oopsie.
Yeah, and, you know, it was missing for a few hours, and that caused a huge data missync and whatnot. It was a pain in the ass to fix, but luckily we had a rollback we could go back to for, you know, not too long, and it fixed it. So I just want to say from a different perspective that there is not a single person out there who deals with code or deals with any kind of app development or game development that hasn't shipped something that has broke. So it's happened to everybody. And, you know, my sense is that, you know, these guys are people too. Let's not bring the knives out. Let's, you know, say that this was bad, but let's just not, you know, completely denigrate people.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this was a convergence of factors that was one, we haven't seen a botched update the whole year that I can think of. It's been quite a while since we've seen a botched update like this. So people almost, I mean, I for one at least didn't even think about that happening anymore. And then two, with the upheaval over the global cool down, which granted probably didn't need to get to that level to begin with.
Players were in a mindset.
They were already in the mindset, so it was just gas on the fire.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I also want to say about this is that the QA team and the launch team will be taking notes on this to prevent this kind of stuff from happening in the future, see how they can modify tests to catch these kind of things and whatnot. That's just the way things work in a company like Jankix.
And you know, you might have more insight because this is more your wheelhouse, but for me, just as a player, and I think pretty typical of most players, we go, how do you not catch this in QA? Because when I logged in, it was all evident.
You know what the difference
right
is?
In my face.
You know what the difference is? The people using QA are using probably accounts that they set up in a known state, whereas they can't outright have a look and see what your state might be, what player A's state might be, and what player B's state might be, and how that might interact with the update. Because there's just so many different player states that they can't anticipate that can trigger these. And there was obviously a few big player states that they missed that they didn't anticipate.
So would they be? So you're saying they're using some kind of like Jagex account to be testing?
Yeah, yeah. Like you would say, set up an account that has no sigils on it, test the update. Set up an account that had all these sigils on it that were fully charged, test the update and its launch. Test some that were in the middle and, you know, roll out the update kind of thing and whatnot.
Could they actually use like their own accounts or something like that to where it's not just some blank slate? Like, wouldn't that be more realistic?
You know, if I was thinking the best way to do this, it would require a lot of automated testing and a lot of time. It would be to have a look at every account that owns the old sigils in game and randomly select from that pool to copy that state onto a Jmod test account and run automated tests with that.
Well, that
might have been
simple.
Done. I don't know if it would have been done, but I don't know. I don't know how Jagex QA works. That's one of the sides of the company I know the least about.
Well, and I think that's one of the sides that I think people have the most questions about.
Yeah, and you know, it's really unfortunate because last year at RuneFest they did have a section where you could go QA test a piece of content. Unfortunately, we didn't get to that because it was closed by the time we wandered upstairs.
Yeah, you can't be everywhere at once.
Yeah, so that's the one thing, one of the things I wish I would have capitalized on better there last year. So, anything else on sigils? I mean, I think we've handled most of what the players had and what the actual content side of it was.
The very last thing is, I don't necessarily know why it felt like this, but it did feel like they were in a hurry for this one for some reason. I don't know why.
You know why it felt like it was in a hurry? Because it was mentioned in the month ahead post.
Yeah, I mean, we did find out about it like right at the tail end of development, which that's not complaining about that. That's okay. But then when you have these things, then it really feels rushed. And I've said it a million times, take your time to get it right.
You know what this should have been done as? Sorry for interrupting you.
Oh, no, go ahead, Matt.
This should have been spun as a sigil revamp. And they should have added, you know, 2 to 3 new sigils with this and brought it in with Combat Week at Shattered Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been fine. I probably would have put it in the beta test. There just wasn't any rush for this. Like, there shouldn't have been, like, a rush for this. No one was, like, begging for it or yelling about it. And in cases like that, well, actually, in all cases, just take your time. If it gets pushed back a week, you're going to deal with less flack that it's been delayed than you will when it's broken. Like, I just think it's better to delay if there's any doubt whatsoever. So, for what it's worth, that's my last point.
Alrighty. I don't think I have anything else left to say. I got my two main bits out about rolling back and learning from this from the QA side. So I think we'll just watch this as we go forward on this. And, you know, just a reminder to everybody out there, when you're interacting with community folk, be kind, be civil, because it's not them doing this. In fact, the devs probably didn't even mean to break it.
I'm sure they didn't mean to break it. And I hope they enjoy their long weekend and sit in a hot tub or relax somehow.
Yeah. It is a bank holiday in the UK on Monday, so update will be Tuesday.
They probably need that extra day this week.
Yeah. Alrighty, so moving on, to our next piece of news, and that is the Clan Cup Big Game Hunter. And this was, of course, what I said they went with as the main headlining update this week on the news posting, which, it, you know, it has begun. And if you're in a clan, you're gonna want to take note of this, because I'm trying to figure out why this wasn't made a bigger deal sooner. Because, you know, it comes out on the Monday. Granted, yeah, you have everybody's got a certain number of attempts, and you can have your top 10 competitors in who can get the most dinosaurs caught and whatnot. But I feel like this could have been hyped up a little bit more. But in case we were wondering what all this is, it started this week on August 19th, and each player will have 3 one-hour attempts to skin as many dinosaurs as they can. These sessions can be abandoned and restarted at any time during the week, and you can skin any dinosaur, so that means you only need 75 Hunter and 55 Slayer. The first place clan will receive access to the Crystal Avatar, which is a 12% XP boost and a 100% faster capping for a month, and will have their clan's thread stickied in the recruitment forum. Runners-up will get access to the Crystal Avatar and a 9% XP boost and 75% faster capping. And they also made Big Game Hunter a bit more fair in terms of leveling out the equipment that people may or may not have. Multi-spawn encounters are disabled. Dinosaurs will never go into hunting. Surge, Bladed Dive, Barge, and Escape will have cooldowns of 10 seconds as if you had the mobile perk, so everyone will have that. Dwarven Chain Axe won't work. Ring of Whispers won't boost your chance to get an extra log or vine. Lumberjack Aura won't work. The Nature Sentinel outfit won't work. Perfect Juju Potions won't work. Hunter Lodge bonuses won't work. The Honed perk won't work. And the Prism of Salvation will not work. So as you can see here, what effectively ends up happening with this is that everybody is brought down to a level that you don't need to have any of the unlocks. And it's 100% fair throughout the duration of the session. So, I have a clan that's taking part in this.
And this is only the Big Game Hunter, huh? It's not...
Only Big Game Hunter. Only Big Game Hunter.
All right.
I have a clan taking part in this. Clan Quest is in fourth with 167 dinosaurs skinned. I think we're still missing one or two people who have skinned... They're dinosaurs. In position one, we have the Order of War with 221, the Outlanders with 181, Maxed with 178, Clan Quest with 167, Scape and Chill with 166, and Efficiency Experts is at 159.
I can't believe they're not first, but then again, you've taken away all their toys, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing with Big Game Hunter. There's no way to really, I don't know, maybe there is, but it doesn't feel like there's a way to speed it up. Like, it just is what it is.
Yeah. For what it's worth, you know, we've had our eye on this since it was first announced. I made sure that our people would be well informed of it, and to my knowledge so far and what I can see even up to right now, everybody is being well informed about it, so I am very pleased with the way Clan Quest is carrying itself in this competition. Just the amount of dinosaurs that we've been able to put forward on this is absolutely amazing. I think our highest, let me just see, looking back here, I think our highest was something like 22. One person got 22.
Oh, wow.
Or 23. Tycho got 23.
Look at Tycho, yeah. Junior's just a little too underpowered for all that.
Oh?
And Big Game Hunter takes me forever. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, it takes forever. In 3 hours, I probably get about five.
In case anyone's wondering, Tanis is referring to the vision aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I still run into people that I think know that don't know. And... that happened just this week, actually. So yeah, it's a thing. I don't know.
I also love the fact that on the post detailing the day three results, three of the five posts are from Clan Quest members. So that's nice to see as well. And yeah, this is a bit of an advertisement for Clan Quest right now. So I'll throw a link in the show notes to our recruitment thread. That's something as well. If anyone out there
Clan
is listening
Quest is,
wants to join,
it's a good clan.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's a wide range. I think when you think Clan Quest, you think only Quest, but
no, it's everything.
I was really surprised. Like the first day, I saw people talking about bossing and stuff. I'm like, huh? Am I in the right place?
And that's something I'm extending out, because for those of you guys who don't know, I'm actually head of Guild Council in Clan Quest, which effectively means that the official term for that position is that I am the communicator between the Guild Council and the membership, but at the same time, I also am determining the direction things are going. And I was a bit under the weather this week, so I didn't do and shepherd any this week, but we are actually undergoing a recruitment push. So if anyone is interested who is listening, let us know. Visit the recruitment thread, link in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. All right. I don't think there's much else to mention about Clan Cup, even though that was a nice advertisement for Clan Quest. So.
Dude, I can't get over that 12% avatar. Ugh.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to be able to take number one, but I'm definitely hoping we can continue to push the tempo and get up to three, probably.
God, that would be so nice.
Yeah.
12% avatar would be so nice. makes me cry.
Alrighty, moving on into the patch notes now. A huge list of patch notes this week, so it goes without saying that, you know, if you guys ever have patch notes when it's a patch note week, just hit us up. And boy, did I just say hit us up?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, send us your patch notes next time there's a huge patch note week. Starting off with achievements, being there, done that achievement now checks for the totem count correctly. I don't understand why that's a need to check the totem count on that.
Huh.
Because that's the one that requires you to buy everything from the player-owned farm store. That's something that I was wondering about coming into this. So,
if we've learned anything this week, there's not always a direct path between A and B. Sometimes it goes walkabout all around.
Yeah, that's exactly what
things
they said.
Things become interconnected.
Audio astray, water sound effect, East of Castle Wars has been removed. That's nice. Fixed an issue where ice fans killed on Ice Mountain were not counted towards Slayer assignments. Boosting your Slayer level to kill NPCs above your base level now awards the correct amount of Slayer XP while on task.
Okay. Was that different than the Wilder Pie bug from this week?
I didn't see anything in here about Wilder Pies. Was there?
Okay. I thought it wasn't like it wasn't increasing the Slayer level. But I could be wrong. I mean, there's so many things going back and forth. I guess we'll just take it that it's fixed.
Yeah, I don't see anything about the Wilder Pies. Continuing on, metallic dragon trinkets now correctly note reinforced dragon bones after killing elite rune dragons. Edge case there because of the elite. Iron Men can no longer obtain another player's summoning scrolls by killing their familiars in the wilderness. that's a funny one. Mazka will now suggest you obtain a task from Lanakea if your Slayer in combat level is appropriate to do so. Fixed an issue where heated tea flasks were being consumed when used on a co-op Slayer partner.
Okay. That's a weird one.
Yeah, because the heated tea flask is supposed to be the infinite tea cup so that you can remove aggression potions. And that thing's not cheap.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah. I thought it was a quest item.
No,
or something.
No,
like,
it's from Clue Scrolls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's basically a tea flask that lets you drink tea, have an unlimited supply of tea if you want to remove aggression potion effect.
Okay, calm down. Have a spot of tea.
Yeah, I actually have that.
Good.
I have one of those. The puncture bleed applied when using the mutated dazing shot ability is now cleared reliably. This change will affect the likes of the reflect mechanic on phase two of the Virago encounter. Tuska's Wrath will now deal the extra damage to Kelgirian demons inside of Elite Dungeon 3 when on a correct Slayer task. And this is kind of similar to what we had last week with Tuska's Wrath not working for various Slayer creatures. So it's good that's been fixed. Jungle Demon during Monkey Madness will now deal damage to protect from magic.
I hate that thing.
Yeah.
That was not fun.
No. No. And you know what the funny part about this is? This has probably been like this since EOC came out.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was EOC.
Yeah, probably.
That was that made all of protection prayers only 50% effective.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Could you imagine how long this has potentially been this way? And you know, it might not have been. This might have been something that a change was made elsewhere. And like I said, you pull on one weed and something else comes undone. That's what this could have been. But boy, people were having an easy time with this quest if this was the case.
You know, maybe. I mean, who's going to complain if it's easier?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And this is one of the most dreaded quests. I mean, you probably might not even know that, but like people do
I
not
remember.
Love
I remember
Monkey
how painful
Madness.
It was prior to EOC, that fight.
Yeah.
The jungle demon. I remember that.
Yeah. It's rough.
Twin Furies will now show debuffs applied to them. Corrected the Slayer full Slayer helmet tier 4 defense requirement in the Slayer reward shop to match its level. Some changes for clue scrolls. The mysterious clue scroll from Avoid Dance can now be used to dig with the player's spade on the tool belt. Fixed an issue where players couldn't claim their clue scroll from Abba's Alerter when clue scrolls were toggled off in the settings. That's a bit of a weird one, and annoying one at that. A clue scroll leading to the desert quarry has been updated to reflect the changes made in the mining and smithing rework.
Got to get that in line?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hopefully they've heard about it by now, eh?
Yeah.
Alrighty, now here comes everyone's favorite fixes, engine and client changes. Improve the way text and models are rendered on mobile devices. Some client freezing issues on mobile devices when the network connection is disabled has been fixed. Adds the ability for web shop detail to be rendered in-game. I don't know what exactly that means, but okay. Fixed inputs on mobile devices sometimes incorrectly occurring at the previously tapped location. That could be a killer.
It could be.
And, you know, this is why mobile is still in beta. You're seeing all these kinds of changes come out and be fleshed out even on the Android side. Here's one for us Mac users. Fix the command key modifier on Mac OS. Yeah, you could never use command on the in-game settings on RS, believe it or not. And I don't even know what that one is the equivalent of on Windows, because on Windows you have Control and Alt. So this one is another one, because on the Mac we have Control, Alt, and Command. So, engine side changes have been made to improve puzzle box behavior, and improvements have been made to font rendering. I didn't notice anything different with the font, so that's good. That means it was a change that was made under the hood and didn't disrupt any of us. Graphics changes. Players can no longer walk inside a rock inside the Sophanim Slayer dungeon.
Oh, walk in the rock, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Saren during Desperate Times now has the correct graphic icon. A safe spot when fighting nightmare creatures has been removed. The artifact in the King Black Dragon's Lair was missing. Was missing blocking. And this has now been fixed. And the grayscale filter will now correctly change things into grayscale. Is grayscale one that you use?
No, I not usually. I usually invert. That will usually do it for me. I can't think of anywhere I've used grayscale yet.
Yeah, and you know, just to recap on this, the Filters and Skyboxes update was billed as an update for movie makers, but it was probably one of the best accessibility updates they ever did for you, right?
It was the best. Yeah, it was the best. I was using it last week a lot with Shattered Worlds. Every time I'd hit like one of the ice kind of worlds, like everything's white. I couldn't see the dots on the ground once you killed everything. Like I couldn't see anything. And so I inverted the colors. Totally cool. Just flew right on through. So yeah, huge accessibility update.
And if anybody doesn't know where to access this, you right-click the world map icon. It is, right?
Yep.
Yeah, for skyboxes and filters. Minigame-wise, changes made to the Vile My Herbs reward from Livid Farm. The various Juju herbs now work with this. Arbok and Bloodweed work with it, and Felstock will now also work with it as well. Quests added more access to the Sextant during Path of Glaufrey. The Supreme Commander will no longer refer to Veldabin as being dead after he steps down as king in Birthright of the Dwarves.
Oh, Birthright of the Dwarves.
I'm more laughing at the fact that there was a line of text that referred to Veldabin as being dead.
Well, that probably was from your playthrough because you killed everybody, didn't you? You just murdered people left and right.
I don't think I did for that one.
Oh, okay.
But
I thought you
maybe.
Did.
I don't know. I don't remember what I did for that one. You're right. I probably did. Ivy Sophista, very sophisticated name, will no longer talk about the events of Wel'Gothic Sleeps if the player has not started the quest. During the needle skips, you will now correctly unlock the memory fragment a second chance when using the keyword Megan. That's a pretty big one. Megan was a pretty big one, I will say. The empty throne room is no longer listed as a reward from the dig site quest, as this is no longer required to access the room. And of course, the reason for that is that's where the dark Animica resides.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Skilling wise, Samid's gloves will now activate correctly when training divination and invention. Jumping over the bridge at Gutanoth will only ask for coins once. I don't know if anybody else does that, but I do that for clues sometimes. There.
Oh, okay. I was like, why would you be there? What?
Yeah. You can now chop down trees and miscellaneous while using the Dwarven Chain Axe in your inventory. The Tyrus Camp Furnace will now actually allow you to smith items, or smelt items, rather.
Oh, that's good. You're bringing it in line.
Now, here's a bit of a weird one. You can now add the Dungeoneering Pickaxes to your tool belt, even if you don't have the required mining level for them.
That just doesn't really make much sense.
No, it doesn't, does it?
The only case for this I could see is if you were dungeoneering with someone that can make a higher powered pickaxe and you don't know when you might be doing dungeon with them again, so they make it for you, you pop it on your belt, and then you can go ahead and use it whenever you get the mining level rather than to have them with you the next time you go dungeon and you have the level.
Okay.
I mean, otherwise,
I don't know either. Second guard has been added to the south side of the Anachronia base camp that can deal with all your agility needs. Added a toggle in the settings menu to turn strength XP on or off for barbarian, barehanded fishing. This one is a good one because, you know, I've long been a proponent that people should not be forced to get XP that they don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. Fixed a typo with the Summer Escape interface showing a weekend event during the week. Okay, that's minor. Thakad Sigmundson has finally heard about the mining and smithing rework. At the end of the Fremenic Isles quest, he now says that you can mine Dragolith beyond the Northeast Bridge instead of Runeite. That's good. I'm glad we're finally getting that message out, because it certainly was everywhere, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And finally fixed an issue that would cause dialogue to show in the chat log without a player's name when logging in near an evil tree. I have no words. Okay. Auto-sanctifier unlock description now displays as holding 50 charges instead of 10. I wonder why I put that patch note in there. That one doesn't seem that worthy.
Maybe they were at 99 and they needed one more.
Maybe. Added members icon next to peer essence in the mining skill guide. A grammatical inconsistency within the dungeoneering skill guide has also been resolved. And moving to the end of the text-based patch notes, a grammatical error when a Saren spirit disappears has been resolved. And, you know, I mentioned this one because one thing I would absolutely love to have is I would love to have a consistent grammatical sense and a consistent tense when it comes to patch notes. You know, we can do it in game. It'd be nice to have that in for here for patch notes.
It should be past, right?
Yeah.
These are all things that they've already done.
Yeah. And see the thing,
telling us about.
And see, the thing is, when I'm reading these patch notes to you guys on the show, I see what's on the screen and I kind of rephrase them differently from time to time. So I'm not reading exactly what was there. I'm just reading it in the way that makes the most sense. The update of the Geyser Titan dialogue to reference geodes instead of gems. Okay. Shop interface is no longer closed if you have less than 3 inventory spaces left and have never seen the full inventory pop up.
What? That's
weird. A weird one. That's a weird one. Here's one that I noticed and glad it's been fixed. Clan chat job titles will now update the clan chat player list when the alphabetical position changes with display name. So what was happening is that one job who was previously set for a different player wouldn't be the correct job for a member based on this, whenever the list would shift.
Yeah, that's good.
Remove the player-owned port enhancer from the hidden temple of the Amanishi trunk. And camera shake can now be disabled in the game interaction setting section of the gameplay general settings.
Where does the camera shake?
That was my question.
I don't remember.
That was my question. Where does the camera shake?
I don't know.
Maybe some kind of bossing instance, perhaps? I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of, like maybe at Virago. What? It shakes at... Tycho says it shakes at Big Game Hunter when failing.
Oh, yeah, I have heard that.
Okay, I've never noticed it shake. All right, fair enough.
Well, you've never failed,
Shane.
Oh,
I have failed.
You're just a badass.
I have failed.
Oh, okay.
I have failed. Anyways, that's it for the patch notes, folks. We're going to move on to a couple of other little things. But first, just to mention that it is indeed Dungeoneering and Elite Dungeons Week for the Summer Escape. I think you have something you want to tell the listeners?
I do. So I did some traditional Dungeoneering this week, and it was, you know, that was cool and everything, and I thought we were getting great tokens. You know, we'd do a large floor. I was walking away about 25K tokens. I'm like, yeah, right, man, this is great. And then I went and started doing some token farming with a couple friends on ED1, and basically you just, you know, you do floor one, you got one person that's using like mech gems and pulling your mobs around, and you got someone in melee that's just wiping them out with AoEs, and then you have someone doing magic, which I think they called it a Balmer. Don't ask me what that means, because I don't do combat, really, so I don't know.
They cast a vulnerability spell to reduce the amount of damage it does.
There we go. So that was like, that was our setup, and basically we'd just send in someone, like the leader would scout to see how many bosses were in there, and we tried to pick, we would go in with anything from 2 to 3, and each boss you took down was like 10K tokens. I mean, I walked away in an hour with 150 tokens, and I don't even think, I think you could do a lot more than that, because we were just casually playing. I mean, you know, we're playing, but it wasn't like sweaty.
You weren't trying to get to the end and kill Siryu.
No. You just run through, you kill the mini bosses, then you tally out to max, re-up everything, go straight back, because you can use your max portal. So it's perfect. Like, you just tally to max, hit the bank, that recharges your health, hit the prayer, Return of the Prayer, back to the portal. Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom.
And you just do it, rinse and repeat.
Yeah, and correction vulnerability increases the damage you deal. I forget the name of the other one then that decreases the damage it deals. But, yeah, we were doing regular dungeoneering this week and, you know, getting that same kind of, you know, 15 to 25K tokens per run. And that's on its surface pretty good, right?
Yeah, but, no, I mean, Monday night I was like, oh, this is great. You know, I need this because my goal for a long time, ever since it came out, was to get that gold accumulator, like the good one, the advanced one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I never thought it was going to happen. I'm like, there's no way. I'm never going to get this because I don't like doing dunge that much.
Oh, God. No.
I really don't. But this token farming, if there's anything that you want for tokens, do it this way. Do it in elite dungeons. There is no substitute for it. Just quick, just token farming. Just hit the mini bosses and out.
Imagine you combine this with Slayer and do elite dungeon too.
Oh, I would love it. I actually this week, I think I'm going to try to get through on story mode, just so that I can get to elite dungeons too. But yeah, long story short, I did get the advanced gold accumulator, and I plan to never do dunge ever again.
Thank God,
I'm done.
The only reason I do it, only reason I do it, is a social experience. Like, I absolutely hate it. I find the maps too dark. I can't see, and you know, I realize being with you, I don't have any excuse to say that. But I just find it hard to see stuff on those maps.
You know, you're not the only one, and I constantly, because I played with the same people for so long, I forget that other people don't know that. And so I go in, and I don't think some of the people that we were playing with actually knew, which was unfortunate.
Yeah,
towards,
it's fine.
The end of the run. Yeah,
it's fine. But yeah, so this goes until Monday. 23.
Yeah, get those tokens.
August 25th. So three days left. 3 days left.
Yeah.
Pretty, pretty good. All right. There was a live stream this week. This one focused a lot on the early game experience. And you and I were chatting about this pre-show. But you didn't take too much away from this, whereas, you know, I was absolutely enjoying this one.
But this was a developer's Q&A.
It really was.
I was bored to death.
Because, you know, you look at this and some of the things that they talked about was the early game experience, but also new interfaces. So the prayer interface is going to be completely reworked. There's going to be a filter button to show prayers that you don't meet the requirements of, either level or quest-based. There's the quick prayer setup button as it is now, and the max prayer points has been turned into a button that shows the currently active prayers. And are you ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
Their stats.
Oh, that's cool.
The stats that they boost you to. This is something that we had prior to EOC, and it never, ever came back. Do you remember that, right?
Vaguely, yeah. Yeah, vaguely. One thing I'll say about like a lot of these interface changes and stuff, who would have thought that mobile was going to make our desktop experience better? But
yeah.
I actually think that's exactly what's going on here.
Exactly. And, you know, if I had to wager a bet, that's the majority of what we're waiting for on mobile right now.
Yeah, makes sense.
But, yeah, I mean, prayer stats are back, which, I mean, now you can see what it's doing if you hover over the tooltip. But it's nice to just have a general style of interface where you can see what exactly is happening with this. So I'm very pleased about that because this is something that needed to be brought back many, many years ago, and it's finally here where you can say, oh, what exactly is my vengeance or whatnot going to be doing, or my turmoil going to be doing, that kind of thing, right? So, like, it shows melee strength plus 6, prayer drain 3, so on and so forth. So, all in all, just a nice change to the prayer UI right there. Other things that we're going to be getting, and this one's a big one. You'll recall that right now, if you go into the adventures menu and choose paths, that tab really ain't that useful to people like you or myself who have leveled up a lot and know what we want to do without, needing to be told what to do by the game. So that has been changed to an activity tracker. And with this, it will now track quests. So you'll be able to see what your current state is in the quest. Click it and go directly to the journal, see rewards, mini games, D&Ds, daily challenges, show your progress to all of those. It can track XP and skills. So for example, if you set a goal level of 99 in a certain skill, you can pop that skill on the activity tracker and you'll get a progress bar that updates live whenever you get XP. That's a big one. You can pop the Slayer counter on there. And they say if nothing is tracked, it will show the path system. And what they effectively wanted to do with this was create a window that is similar to other games' objective tabs or mission lists, so to speak, like you would have in other MMOs. So I'm really a fan of this new activity tracker. In the fact that I'll have a use for it and you'll have a use for it and new players will have a use for it too.
Yeah, no, actually, yeah, I like that change as well.
And I'm just looking at it in the stream right now. You know, some of the interaction for ordering them and deleting them seemed a bit clumsy, but we'll have to get our hands on it to see how that goes and how it behaves on mobile and whatnot. But
yeah, I mean, do you think it's going to actually get to a place where achievements are easy and manageable and not hideous and all that? Because I know you really enjoyed that update.
Yeah. Yeah. It did need a bit of work to it, and this could be one way to improve that going forward. But the one I'm actually most excited about is the XP tracker, believe it or not, on this. So
chain and an XP tracker?
Yeah, because
I thought that was just something that happened.
Got,
you didn't really pay attention
right,
to it.
Right, right. But it's got a nice progress bar. And you could position this right below the world map, as most of the other games have it. And this is something that RS has needed for years, and I feel that they're finally delivering on it. And yeah, it's also going to be the path system for new players, which we'll get to in just a bit. But before this, they mentioned that everybody will get 3 new additional action bars at some point in the near future. So if you have 6 currently, you'll get 9, or if you have 10, you'll get 13. But there is no cap, or there is no way of showing more than 5 right now on the screen, and that's something that's not going to be addressed. They were unequivocally clear on that.
Yeah, I'm really glad about this because they are so expensive to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is nice.
I only
nice
bought treat. One back in the day, so I'll be going up
yeah,
to 9.
Yeah, me too.
6. But too. And that's going to be enough for me. So, in any case,
well, you know, I found that I need more now because you have to have 2 different setups between if you're using full revolution or like regular revolution. Like yeah. It has to be set up a different way.
Yeah.
So I'm actually looking forward to the 3. I need them.
That makes sense. Debuff bars and buff bars will be changing. They'll be resizable. We'll be able to have up to 50 on them dynamically updating. We saw this before on a live stream. It's something that is in the works and will come out eventually. It's part of the mobile suite of fixes. So that's just a reminder that that is an update that's in progress. Free-to-play will be getting more daily challenge slots up to 5, just like members. So they get the full experience on that. They're going to be adding new basic abilities for new players, which are effectively going to be weaker versions of existing abilities to make more complete rotations.
That's
for those
nice.
Who don't have the level. And that's good because you want to get people on board with the EOC style of combat early. And if you only have a handful of abilities, you're going to feel handicapped in that regard. So this is a very good thing.
Oh yeah, for sure. Combat is rough at, you know, the lower levels. Like I still get frustrated a little bit with my other account because I don't have things that I'm used to having, you know.
Yeah. They're going to also add an eat food button that will eat the first piece of food in your inventory if you just wanted to put that on your action bar instead of having your rock tail on your action bar or something. This is another
But that's super cool, man.
Yeah, it is.
Because I use different, you know, a lot of different food. Like if I'm slaying, I might just have like shark or something. But if I'm, you know, going to God of War 2 or something, I might have rocktail. And then if I'm going somewhere where it's like hide in a corner and hope that your friends can carry you, then I've got Sailfish or whatever I need, you know, like I did when we went with David. Yeah. So this is great, like without not having to change that all the time. That's nice.
Also, Berthorpe and Taverly are being split apart again. Going back to how they used to be.
This is actually my favorite because, like, the decluttering of that area.
You just gotta look at the world map and how clean it is now compared to what it was before.
But this is, like, the Taverly Berthorpe area, it's really hard for me to find things. Yep. And so I'm really hoping that this will help a lot, declutter that and make it a little bit easier.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, they're wanting these to be more themed. Berthorpe is going back to how it used to be. For example, the Berthorpe soldiers there doing their training exercises to hold the trolls back as one thing. Taverly is, of course, going to be the town that's more focused on the herblore summoning side of thing, druidic ritual, that kind of thing. Along with this, there's going to be many, many new paths added to the game. Sets for Berthorpe, Lumbridge, and other large pieces of content. And the initial beginner paths won't display unless you have a combat level, or sorry, a total level below 250. So.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Also with this, the Ashdale tutorial has been completely removed.
Because we're getting tutorial idling.
Yeah, and Gudrick, if for some reason you want to go to Ashdale's in Port Sarum.
Wait a minute. We're still going to have the quest, though, right?
Yeah, Shadow Over Ashdale, yeah. That was a good quest. Okay. That was a great quest.
It was! And, I mean, that's still like 20k... bonus a week to go down there and kill Hegaroth for like takes like 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
the combat tutorial is now a part of the Berthorpe path set. So what this means is that once you land in Lumbridge, you'll be sent to Berthorpe, and there you'll learn all about combat, EOC, setting up abilities and action bars. And they also did say with this that they'll be improving the standard collection of action bars that you get and the loadouts for them based on melee and magic and whatnot. So
they're moving that from the Combat Academy?
I think so. But Combat Academy will probably still be there, so that's actually a good question.
But shouldn't we be going over that on Tutorial Island? Doesn't that seem where you should learn about how the combat works?
You're right. We used to do that. And what wound up happening was that people wanted Tutorial Island back just as, you know, the quick 5 to 10 minute introduction to the game. You know, to highlight and get used to the interface and whatnot. And you really can't teach EOC, in my opinion, that quick. So I think it makes sense to have it in Berthorpe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
They also did say that the Blood Pack quest will be streamlined as a result, because that was one of the teaching experiences they used for EOC.
Gosh, I don't even remember it.
Yeah, same. And the focus is on the first few hours of gameplay instead of the first, you know, 7 to 12 minutes as been the focus of Tutorial Island and many different reworks like Ashdale and whatnot in the past. And that's what they're focusing on now, is after you get to the mainland, how do you get someone in game and keep them playing? And when you think about that, that makes sense, because you get plopped down in Lumbridge, right? And one of the huge barriers is that, oh, this game is huge. What do I do next? That's the big question. And I think that's what this path system is going to fix. And
yes,
the Berthorpe Taverly rework is going to fix.
And I've definitely seen those feelings reflected in various posts on different social medias and whatnot from actual new players that are kind of overwhelmed once they get through that and they don't know necessarily what to do. So
yeah,
I think this is all good. And I mean, for us, we don't feel the impact of it, but it's really important for new players, and especially if we get some new players with mobile, you want them to get into the game, get engaged, and want to come back, rather than getting to that point, being overwhelmed and be like, well, I'm done. That was fun, but I don't really, you know, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, and, you know, this is what I want to address. You know, there were people laughing at them for showing this off in a content showcase, and they were wondering, why are we focusing on the new player experience? There's no new players. There's no new people coming into the game. And, you know, I wanted to talk a bit about this because, you know, why focus on a new player experience? That's a very good question. And the answer comes down to the fact that, you know, when you see that you have RuneScape Mobile, and they've done research on this, and we know it from old school, there's going to be people coming back to the game who last played in 2012 or even before who are going to need to be brought up to speed on how modern combat works, how the modern UI works. And there's also going to be an influx of new players coming in from the Android and iOS app stores. That happened on old school. It's going to happen on RS3 as well. And that's as simple as it is. And this is, you know, in very much the same ways that when you go about bringing people into another organization like a fan site or a clan, is that it's all about the initial first experiences when you get there. And if you don't have that experience, people aren't going to play. And, you know, you can say that, hey, Jagex needs more money because, you know, more players is good for the bottom line. But players also need to understand that having more players, new players coming into the game, is good for the game's economy because it effectively creates and evens out a pyramid where we have more people at the top and mid-range end. And the more people we have at the lower ends and the lower mid-tier to balance out what we have at the top just creates a more cohesive community and more people that we can interact with in-game. So the new player experience is important, and I'm really glad they're focusing on it.
Yep.
And, I mean, we used to say, and I think people used to joke, that, oh, there's no new players in RuneScape, but you have been out and about in the wider community, and you have seen that there are new players.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of those people. I used to say that there's no new player, there's new accounts, but there's no new players, right? But yeah, I've been dipping my toe in various various ponds, and I'll be damned, I'm seeing their post, and they're saying, they're asking for advice. What do I do? You know, what's the best way to start? What's the best you know, thing to get started with? Should I start doing combat? Should I start scaling? Like,
listen to RSBNB update. We can answer all those questions.
We definitely could.
So, I miss those kind of questions because that's the kind of questions we used to have years ago when people were in their 50s and 60s when we were first starting out. And, you know, we've shifted since then. So it'll be fun to see if we can get back to that when mobile launches. So fingers crossed on that.
Yeah, it would be fun. And, yeah, it's always nice to be able to help somebody, throw a suggestion, and just remember, if you're gonna help somebody, give them a suggestion. Just give them a suggestion. Don't tell them that you have to do it this way because that kind of sucks and it turns people off.
And there is no right way of doing things in this game.
There really isn't. There's a right way for whatever you're trying to get at. But your goals might be vastly different from someone else's.
Indeed. Alrighty, well, that's it for RS News this week. We're going to move on to our two listener questions. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters for the week. And this week I'd like to thank Arvids L, Brock H, Cass, Darren L, Diana, Kyle, Logan H, Rippeth, Tom V, and Zez. Thank you all of you for your support of RSBNB Update. It truly means the world to us. And, you know, we talk about what you can gain access to for this. And, you know, for as little as $1 a month, you get special mention in our show notes, early access to the show notes, the ability to join our roundtables, which we just did this last weekend, which was a really amazing one, wasn't it?
It was so fun. Yeah. I really, really, really enjoyed that one. Like, that one was fun. That one was kind of like that impromptu one that wasn't even official. Remember on
double XP weekend. Yeah. And that's where we got the idea for that. So I'm glad we're doing this. But most importantly, you get access to that entire monthly bit catalog and to vote on the monthly bits. That vote just included, and this month we're going to be talking about the RuneScape 3 game settings, that maze of settings that everyone has to go through. We're going to be going through them, talking about which ones are useful, how it could be streamlined, and ultimately why it's important to have a look at that, I think, especially going into this era of mobile. So that'll be a fun one to talk about. For $3 a month, you can gain special access to a VIP rank on Discord. You get a mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out on the podcast every week and exclusive outtake access to the outtakes that we use to build the clip show. And, of course, as I mentioned, we got the monthly bit bonus show. This month's going to be on the RS game settings. Inside RSBNB update, where we interview one of our producers or look at where they record the show. We got the round table. But should we, you know, move past that tier and get to the $99 a month tier? That'll be movie night with us in the RSBNB Discord, where we'll watch some of our favorite movies. So you can learn more about all of this at patreon.com/RSBNB. And you can also gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits there as well. So thank you once again to everybody who's supporting us on Patreon and in the general community too.
Thank you, guys.
Alrighty, we're going to start with an audio question from the RR Man.
Hey, hey, it's the RR Man here. 15-year veteran, just picked up my cape the other week. That's a fantastic cape, by the way. Better than any of these comp cape guys out there. That's one of the first items I've actually ever keepsaked, so I'm going to be wearing it all the time. But anyway, I just wanted to ask, now that the sky hasn't fallen and after the hunter nerf, all that's all blown over and we're on to the next one, the farming one, I'm just wondering, is there any way we could ever teach people or inform them of how nerfs work? They simply need to be done sometimes, you know? JX makes mistakes. Every gaming company makes mistakes. So many games out there have patch notes. You know, maybe they're not every week like JX, but so many games out there, they change stats on characters. I don't know. Fortnite, I hear, and you know, these games I don't play, like Overwatch and all that. They have, you know, they decrease this person's attack damage by 5%. They increase this person's damage by 20%. Stuff like that happens all the time. And you don't seem to get as many people whinging as RuneScape when it comes to a nerf. Quite frankly, I'm on the opposite side of tennis, and I think the hunter skill needed to be nerfed because those numbers were ridiculous. People are going to get to the level 99 or 120, whatever, they're going way too fast. Jagex doesn't want that. It's not what they need. That's way too fast. People are going to get to the max and quit. That's just how it goes. Not everyone, even if it's 50% of people that would do that. That's way too many people. So yes, basically, my question is, what can we do to stop people getting so up in arms about a nerf? Maybe we need to change the name. Nerf, it's a way too negative phrase, you know? This is all about balance at the end of the day. Nerfing, it sounds so negative. Anyway, happy scaping, guys. Peace out.
You know, the reason the RS players get so concerned and involved in the debates about what's happening with the game and what's happening with the XP rates is because, you know, you can look at something like Fortnite or you can look at something like Overwatch. But the biggest difference about those is that the folks at Blizzard or the folks at Epic who make Fortnite don't involve the community in their decision-making about what kind of content to bring out. It's as simple as that. The players are involved at an arm's length of making RuneScape. That doesn't happen in Overwatch. That doesn't happen in Fortnite. That is why things are the way they are in RS. And, you know, we've been at varying degrees on the spectrum. We've been at the point where players were submitting updates via Rune Labs and they were going into game. We've been at the point where players were voting on updates in polls. And now we're at the point where players are voting on general themes in surveys. And that's informing the decisions that Jagex then makes on that. So to answer that part of the question, why the players are so passionate about it, it's because the players are involved in the development cycle. I think that's the answer to that side of it.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I can add to that is, like the man expressed, it's a 15-year cape. So a lot of our players have been here for a very long time.
And they remember EOC.
And they're not going anywhere. And, you know, Fortnite's like, what, 3-4 years old. Overwatch,
yeah,
it's the same, yeah. And they're not going to have the shelf life of a RuneScape. There will be another battle royale that comes out.
Royale won't even be the hot sauce.
It won't even be the next thing. Yeah. So I mean, it's kind of apples and oranges with that.
Yeah. And, you know, I actually want to talk about nerfs and whatnot, because I think game balance is incredibly important to RuneScape and all MMOs in general and all games in general, where there's some kind of scene going on where players are interacting and potentially winning or losing competitions based on the XP rates that are there. And, you know, I think what we need to look at in terms of XP is that there's two choices, and we've talked about this before, and Mod Osborne's kind of alluded to this, is that he'd very much love to start over. And if you start over, you build the game to have a correct XP ecosystem and all the different skills in game, which is something that's not going to happen because it just takes so much time. But on the other hand, if we want to have these high XP rates, we need to be looking at methods of training that allow you to do that and allow players, as you say, to get sweaty if they want to with the tick system. But there needs to be a place for that XP to go. And we've detailed that in terms of what is effectively amounts to a virtual XP tracker and getting a reward along the way. That's what we've detailed that too. And, you know, I think there's also another way to do it. And I don't know how you would have done that with Hunter and farming, but rather than nerfing those to, say, the player-owned farm and the turtles, I think the other options might have been to expand out the content in other areas of farming or other areas of hunter, which on the surface sounds good because that's what we call – that's effectively a nerf by bringing other things up, right? Is it kind of levels the playing field? But that requires you to create many other different pieces of content, which isn't something that there's necessarily the time for in-game. So I think that's a side that we can go into as well on that, is that rather than nerfy, you could bring other stuff up, but that involves creating more content. So that's why the difficult decision to nerf, I think, was made. So I don't know if I have anything else left on that one. I think that pretty much covers that.
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone knows how I feel about nerfs, so I'm not going to go into that diatribe again.
Yeah,
I'm just going to leave you with two. We have a couple sayings in the U.S. One is, don't piss down my leg and tell me it's raining, because you can call it whatever the hell you want to. You're nerfing it. And you can put lipstick on a pig. Still a pig.
Yeah, I don't think changing it to balance fixes would solve anything. I think the only way to solve it would have been to, you know, because the turtle nerf was substantial, wasn't it?
You know, yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of XP per hour taken down effectively for the top end. And, you know, I think the only other way to go about that would have been to bring other things up and maybe bring the total XP rates down by 10-15%.
Yeah, you know, everyone acted like, oh, anybody could do that, and it just wasn't the case. I mean, it would have been the same as, like, ripping out Solak, because, hey, not everyone can do that, or take it out, or nerf it. You know, that's why I didn't agree with it, and I don't in general.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just thinking of something in relation to the player-owned farm and how fast that is. But we'll talk more about that in a few weeks once we get the details on that and some other things, won't we? I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, and look, the player-owned farm is something everyone said, okay, the XP level for that probably does need balanced because of what the input side is.
Right.
And to everyone's
fair,
agreed
really,
to that.
You can't compare player-owned farm with turtles in that regard. Those are two comparisons you can't make, I think. Because one is completely AFK, the player-owned farm, Whereas Turtles, you had to actually be at the computer. So you really can't compare those two.
Well, exactly. And like I said, I mean,
they both needed to be updated and changed.
But yes, I agree with that. And I mean, the only thing that I just stress is, most people weren't getting those rates. They weren't. And if you were, you were working your ass off for it. And I don't think that is any different than what high level PVM is. But the player on Farum, yeah, I mean, even when this was being first talked about, everyone I know that is really hardcore into skilling said, we're okay with the XP being adjusted. Like, that's okay because of the input that goes in it. The only thing they had problems with was upkeep and breeding.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
We talked about
and,
that.
And that's why it's definitely not the same basket.
Exactly.
And, you know, I would like to see, and, you know, this is something that we will never see because it doesn't exist. But what I would like to see is what a design proposal for the Hunter rebalance would look like by not taking Turtles down so much, but bringing everything else up.
Yeah, Hunter was one of the most click-intensive active gameplay skills we had. There are other skills that
now we got like 250-300k XP per hour with butterflies AFK.
Yeah, which is that's another story. I truly think that's what people focused on. That's what they were happy about. They didn't have to play. They could AFK and screw everybody that was on the upper end pulling the 1.9s. They right. don't need and, it anyway. And I've see, got my AFK butterflies.
And the reason they got it out and they were able to get that out without too much complaining is because it came out with Anachronia.
Yeah.
Which is another tactic.
Which is
another tactic you could employ.
Don't agree with, but it's I respect the hustle.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, RR Man. All right. So from Tycho now, dear RSBNB, this week we have the prestigious Clan Cup, which has brought the thirst of blood to all clans in RuneScape, or at least should have been in all clans. Surprisingly, I noticed that there is a lack of activity in Big Game Hunter, despite 70% of all RS players being in a clan. This has made me think what could be the cause, and notice that if you do not follow any type of social media or read the RS website, this update is pretty much hidden. Earlier with this year with the mining and smithing rework, we saw Jagex go far and wide with announcing the update. Maybe too far, as their customer support got a lot of noise complaints about the fanatics in the Grand Exchange. My question is, what do you think about the announcement of the Clan Cup, and is there anything you would do or you would change in terms of grabbing the player's attention? So let's take care of this one first, shall we?
Yeah, let's do this. Yeah.
You know, I think it's incumbent on clan leaders to rally their clan members for Clan Cup. And I know, at least the way I do it, is that, you know, we got to keep an eye on everything that Jagex says, especially in relation to clans. So I'm not necessarily too concerned about this. It was mentioned, you know, before on live streams and the like. And, you know, I think Big Game Hunter is also kind of niche, to be honest. I think if we were to really pare this all back, one of the reasons they went with Big Game Hunter is because it's new, lets you draw people into it, and also with that, it can be used as a field test for doing this with some other piece of content in the future. So I think it's just that Big Game Hunter's niche, and this was designed to be a field test for the most active clans out there who are wanting to involve themselves in this kind of competition. So that's my take on it, why we didn't hear more from this. But as we can see here, clans are competing, and it just might be that people don't like Big Game Hunter. I don't know.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with that. if I were going to do anything different, I would have hyped this up consistently through like the whole month ahead. Like starting a month before it started, I would be hyping this every week, every week. You'd see a lot of about it on social media. In fact, I probably
I've
would
been hyping
have reached
it in Clan Quest since August 1st when we heard about it a month ahead.
Well, and I'm talking about like on the Jygex level.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, on the Jygex level, because you could have used your influencers, and you could have used your clan owners to really kind of get a friendly competition going and really kind of rile that up a little bit. I think that would have been helpful, but at the end of the day, Big Game Hunter isn't that popular. It's not because it's like bad content or anything. It's just it doesn't really fall into what skillers think of as skilling, and it doesn't fall into what combat thinks is combat. It's just really new and really different type of thing.
You know, the other limiting factor is for many clans is that it's equalized based on members, so that the way it works is everybody gets three attempts, but there's the top 10 from each clan are taken. So if I do three attempts, it'll take my best one. If Tycho does three attempts, it'll take his best one. And then eight other people do that. There's our 10 entrants. So we can't overload it because we have 475 members.
Right. I actually think that was a good idea.
It's fair because a clan of 10 can compete against a clan of 450.
I like the way they set it up, and I loved that they took out a lot of the bonuses just to even that playing field.
But
I would have loved to seen it spread out across more than just Big Game Hunter. I think if it had been spread out across a few different skills or a few different activities, you would have seen a greater participation in it. I don't know if it's ever been done or if you can do it that way. And look, I understand why they focus on Big Game Hunter. That is the big content that just came out. Of course you're going to focus on that. But I think if it had been spread around, there would have been more clans participating.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So, all right. My second question is about Maud Lee, who will sadly be leaving us this Friday. And also today, Maud Edge announced that he's leaving at the end of the month, too. Throughout his career, he's engaged with many players in all minigames that RuneScape has to offer, hosted boss masses where noobs and elitists could attend, and come up with creative activities that made gameplay more fun when attending. With him gone, an empty hole will be left behind for those who attended and or watched his stream. Do you think Jagex should hire a new moderator as an event organizer, continuing the work Lee left behind him, or do you think that the events in RuneScape should be strictly left to the community? I personally attended a few of his events and noticed that a wide range of personalities gathered around them. People I wouldn't have met in a clan with like-minded people or who don't play in my home world. Looking forward to your questions and see you this weekend. Tycho Elf.
Okay.
Well, I think we got to say that, you know, with Maud Lee leaving, that's definitely he was a good guy. He did lots for Jagex, and you know, in the tweet I sent out from the RSBNB account, I called him a role model to the community ambassador side of things because that's what he was. And you know, his hiring goes back to 2013, and I'm going to go back into a bit of the history here with this because when he was first hired, he was hired along with two other video makers who are going to be handling the video side of things for Jagex. But those other two wound up getting fired for abusing their position. And he was the only one who didn't. So there's lots to be said about him as a person that we need to remember going forward for this, and that's why I see him as a role model to the community and anybody who wants to be a community ambassador type position on that. And, you know, when it comes to things like the patch notes videos, those are great. And, you know, event hosting, pretty much anybody can do that who has a substantial following on Twitch. And, you know, the only thing missing is that they don't have the JMod crown to rally people on twitch.tv/RuneScape, and they also can't spawn things at some kind of mass event at the Lumbridge Crater, for example, that JMods can do, and I know he's done in the past before. So I think those are the really only two differences on that. And highlighting that, I don't think it's anything against him. I just think it's a way that the community engagement strategy goes at Jagex as to why that's happening like that.
Yeah, you know, I think Mod Lee is, he is special because I think we look at him as one of us that made it.
Yeah.
He was a player. He loved playing. He loved making videos. He, you know, I mean, Yak City, baby. You know, I mean, who doesn't remember that? He's a special guy. I've watched every video he's ever made. And I think he's a genuinely good person. And I don't know what the internals are. You know, we don't know why he's moving on. I don't want to speculate about that. But I know Mod Lee was, he's probably one of the best streamers I've ever seen. I don't know how anyone can keep up with the chat the way that he does. So, you know, this one stings just because it's Mod Lee. That was our guy. That was our champion. But I don't think we need to worry because, and I don't think they need to hire someone because we have very capable people in Mod Shawnee and Mod Porky. And I could totally see, one of them, fulfilling this role, maybe hosting some events or this or that. But I could see them stepping into that and doing a wonderful job. So I think it's more like it's just kind of rearranging and, you know, I mean, like I said, we don't know why necessarily. I don't know much about Mod Edge or anything. So I can't really speak to that.
Yeah, we don't know much behind that.
Yeah. I just, you know, I understand why people are kind of upset because he was one of us that made it. And that was something that was special. I mean, it was special in RuneScape, and I think it was special in the gaming world at large. Stuff like that just wasn't typical. So, yeah, we wish you well, Mod Lee.
Indeed, indeed. And, you know, we also, of course, do some weekly patch note stuff in the weekly bite as well at youtube.com/RSBNB. I think it goes without saying that we didn't start the weekly bite to compete with the patch notes videos. We started the weekly bite for other reasons, mainly to get a quick TLDR version of news posts and what happened that week, hence the name, the weekly bite, and patch notes just, fit into that. I like what we do with that. I think it's
great. The bite occupies a space that was open. There had been people in the past that did just the patch notes and went over it, you know, line by line, like what we do in our long form of the show. But that's all that they would do. They just cut a video like that. And then there was, you know, Mod Lee would do a really super short one. So we kind of occupied that middle ground, I think, where we could talk about the headlining update and a few patch notes on top of it. And it kind of gave us a unique position.
Indeed. Indeed. All righty. Thank you, Tycho. And if anybody else wants to send questions in, email questions@rsbnb.com, or you can leave them on Twitter @RSBNB. Send us a direct message or just tag us and we'll get the question in. We're going to move on to tech news right now. And, you know, this one's an interesting one. And, really underscores where Mozilla and Firefox sits in the world. Google, too, with this. So you'll know that when you're on the web, most websites you go to in this day and age have HTTPS up at the top and a little secure lock. And what that means is that your connection is encrypted between you and the server. So presumably no one will be able to snoop on what you're sending or what you're downloading. And that's how, you know, banking started, and pretty much every website does that now. But Google and Mozilla are stepping in to protect internet users in Kazakhstan, of all places. We don't hear about Kazakhstan that much, do we?
That isn't very nice.
What?
It's an awful Borat impression. Oh. That's the last thing I heard about Kazakhstan.
Oh, I'd never watched that movie, and I don't intend to.
It's funny. It was kind of 10 years ago.
Kind of funny.
I don't know if it still holds up.
Anyways, there were credible reports that internet service providers in Kazakhstan were requiring people in the country to download and install a government-based security certificate on all devices in order to get access to the internet. And, you know, if the government says, hey, ISPs in Kazakhstan, you must do this to operate as a business in our country, the ISPs will do that. Now, what this, of course, means is that this government-issued certificate isn't trusted by either of the companies, and once it's installed, allows the government to decrypt or read anything a user will send over their internet connections. And this, of course, bypasses encryption on all the popular sites such as Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Google, pretty much anything with HTTPS. And Google and Mozilla are taking a stand and that they're actually going out there and blocking this certificate to enable the people of Kazakhstan, at least temporarily, to have some level of internet security. And this is an interesting side to look at for both Google and Mozilla, because normally you don't see internet browser manufacturers taking the stand in order to ensure that people are able to access the internet. And this is kind of at that intersection of technology and world geopolitics where the question will come up is, well, should these companies be doing this or should they be submitting to the law that runs in countries like Kazakhstan and China to a lesser degree? But nonetheless, they are rolling out technical solutions to Chrome and Firefox to prevent this certificate from working and are going to stand on the side of users in those countries.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was kind of wondering that. Like, okay, well, you can do this to Kazakhstan, but you're not doing this to China. So that's interesting. I'm all for this. And
now the reason they're not doing it for China is because Google, Facebook, Twitter, they've all signed agreements with China to operate in very specific ways, or at the very least, there's Chinese equivalents to those websites in there. So,
right, but it's kind of shady. But,
yeah, it is. It is, definitely.
And that's more reason for VPNs, right? That's just going to make their business go up. Or can you even get those in those countries? Or you can, right?
You that's can. The whole idea. There are open source VPNs that you could use. I'm just trying to think if a VPN would get by this. Yeah, a VPN would get by that. A VPN could get by that. Yeah, it would. So that's one way to do it if you're a more technical user. But if you're just a run-of-the-mill user, Google is and Mozilla are looking out for these users. And this is something we're going to see a lot more of in terms of, you know, ensuring that certificates work. I think they also did revoke a certificate authority not too long ago that is a organization that issues these certificates. So, I mean, it's an interesting world, and you know, a number of years ago, we wouldn't have seen either of these companies doing something like this. So, we're going to keep an eye on this one and watch. Next up, Google is undertaking a substantial rebrand of Android, in particular, a pop of color and more updates to Android's brand, including a new logo and a move away from the lettering system and popular desserts. So Android Q is becoming Android 10.
Popular desserts?
Yeah,
I'm confused.
And like Android L was, I think L was lemon meringue pie. K was Kit Kat. Or no, L was lollipop. K was Kit Kat. Oh, they were all named off of different desserts. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Isn't that cute?
Yeah.
That's special.
What were some of the other ones? I forget what some of the other ones were because I don't pay attention to those. Cupcake was the first one. C.
Uh huh.
Froyo was F. Honeycomb for H. ice cream sandwich for I, jelly bean for J, Kit Kat, lollipop, marshmallow, nougat. What's, whatever nougat is.
Is this Oreo? Is this a result of take your kid to work day?
No, this is what all the Android versions were named.
I know. Did that come from people bringing their kids to work? And
I don't know.
Like, I mean, come on.
But they said that examples they gave that L and R weren't distinguishable when spoken in some languages. So when people heard them say Android lollipop, it wasn't intuitively clear that it was referring to the version after KitKat, KL. And they say it's even harder for new Android users who are unfamiliar with this naming convention to understand if their phone is running the latest version. We also know that pies are not a dessert in some places, and that marshmallows, while delicious, are not a popular treat in many parts of the world.
Well,
so this is, in a way, just a way to make the operating systems have a more clear and relatable name for everybody in the world by going with the numbering version. So
that reminds me, Shane, of like, this is like similar to the old, did you ever hear about the old, the debacle with Chevrolet naming the Chevy Nova and it didn't sell in Mexico and Spanish speaking countries because that was no go. It happened back in like a long time, but yeah, that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Other options that they had for Q, because, you know, P was the easy one for pie. You could probably think of lots of desserts that start with P. But Q.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Q.
So here's some of the ones that they were likely considering. Carabia, which was a crescent-shaped Greek dessert. Quindim.
Don't heard that.
Quindim. It's like a donut custard in Brazil. Queen of Puddings. Quirks. Android 10 Quirks. That would have been a bad name. So as you can see, you know, things get difficult when it comes to naming things with letters. So that's why they're going for this. And, you know, they just use the version number and it'll make releasing things a lot simpler and a lot more intuitive. And they also have a brand new logo with this because the previous logo went all the way back to 2014. So that's something to pay attention to as we head into the world where we're going to be getting iOS 13 soon. And that'll be the next thing. They're going to try and catch up to the iOS versioning number so that Android will have a equal or higher version number than the iOS because, as we all know, higher is better when it comes to version numbers, right?
Right, and they probably, like, when they were setting down and planning for this, didn't they probably go through the alphabet and come up with a dessert? Like, didn't they get the Q and be like, oh.
Yeah, they were.
And it's only going to get worse. I mean, X? I don't know. Y? Z got me.
Exactly.
You know.
So just something to pay attention to if you're an Android user. Alrighty. Next up, the Apple Card has launched this week, which is Apple's credit card. The idea behind this is that Apple wanted to launch a credit card that would be, quote, as private as cash. And, you know, this goes all the way back to something that Steve Jobs wanted to do in the 90s, and Apple has finally had the ability to do this. So recall that the Apple credit card was announced earlier this year. It's a credit card that was backed by Goldman Sachs, processed by MasterCard. So it's a MasterCard for all intents and purposes. It has no fees, and its primary use is to be used with Apple Pay on an iOS device. And, you know, with this, they say that Apple won't know where you shop, what you bought, or how much you paid. Goldman Sachs, on the other hand, says that they'll never sell or share your information with other companies or reveal your spending habits to advertisers. And MasterCard is just the payment processor in relation to this. So for people who sign up to the Apple Card, it's all done on your device. You even send in your ID verification on your iPhone. And then after you're approved, you can use the card directly from your iOS device with Apple Pay. And then after a few days, they will mail you out a titanium-based physical credit card with your name laser etched on it that you can use if a place doesn't support Apple Pay. Before we go into the card, because there's funny stories about the card this week, the whole purpose of this card is that there's no fees. You get cash back instantly on this, and the highest cash back benefits come to you when you use Apple Pay on your card, up to 3%. And if you even use the physical card, you get a 1% cash back on it. So that's what Apple is hoping that people will – or will draw people into using that card. And, of course, they do get a cut from this, and this is Apple's further diversification away from iPhones, heading towards a more servicey payment side of the economy. So,
I hope all of that is true and they're able to do that. But consumer debt, this is a really, really bad time to be jumping into this thing, because everyone knows, whether they admit it or not, that we're a house of cards right now. And it's going to fall.
You know, it's been that way since 2009, because, you know, we're getting into economic theory here, but following the 2009 recession, all that happened was bad assets were structured away and diluted into other things. They still exist. And, you know, there's still problems in the structural banking system in the U.S.
Well, yeah, and then you do
reverberate to the rest of the world.
An endless quantitative easing. Okay, let's, in other words, get them printers a printing, boys.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. This is good for Apple.
Right. And, you know, there's one thing that scared me about this card, but I didn't mention it because we're not talking about the economics of it.
Sorry, Shane.
Goldman Sachs, in their agreement with Apple, has made this a subprime credit card.
They're going to chop all these up. They're going to package them and chop them up. So whatever Apple and those – and they said doesn't mean shit.
Exactly.
They're not the end user.
And
come on.
And the fact that it's on subprime means that they can offer these cards to people who wouldn't normally qualify for them. And if you wind up with a bunch of people who can't qualify and they can't pay it back, well, there you go.
Haven't we seen this before?
And, you know, I guess, and, you know, what some of the theories were saying on this is that the subprime, the lowest qualifiers on this card would have a credit limit of only $750.
But, you know, that's $750 that people don't have. Like, half of Americans can't handle a $400 bid.
Exactly. And, you know, this is a problem going back to the 1980s with credit cards. I honestly believe that everybody with a credit card should pay it off monthly, because that's the best way to do it. And, you know, when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, people need to be conscious of their debt. But on the other hand, big companies like Apple now and Visa, MasterCard, and everybody who sponsors a card has a duty to ensure that they're not giving out cards to people who can't pay for them. And, you know, it's like any kind of debt too.
Yeah, and the fact that they're doing it subprime ought to be an indication, because everything that I have
seen – I think
we
should explain subprime first. I realize we didn't do that. Prime interest rate is the interest rate at which all the big banks lend from the Federal Reserve in the U.S. or the central bank in another company. Subprime means you're doing lending below that rate. All right.
Because you're a riskier proposition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that indicates something there. Everything that I've seen says that, and I don't know if this is everywhere, but I know in America that consumers are filled up with consumer debt.
Oh yeah. Same in Canada.
I mean, we're at our max. We can't get anymore, which is why they would have went and done subprime. Otherwise, it'd just be a regular card, right?
Yep.
And who Who's it a good idea? Are they they're banking that the government will bail them out? I suppose. Because no rational actor would jump into that if they saw the signs that two guys on a podcast, a RuneScape podcast, see, right?
Well, to be fair, I do also have a degree in economics.
Okay. Well, I don't. But I got some common sense, and I read the news. So, but why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they? We bailed them out before, so... Not Apple, but just in general, the financial sector.
I have no
idea. We'll
do
it again.
I have no idea. And, you know, it's something to watch out for. And if this gets successful and takes off and becomes the third biggest card next to Standard, Visa, and MasterCard, then, yeah, it's something we ought to worry about. But there was one other story with this week. When people are going to get their physical titanium-based cards, it's going to come with a care instruction booklet. In particular... It recommends that you should store it in a wallet, pocket, or bag made of soft materials, and don't store it with another credit card because it might become scratched, and give it the occasional clean with a soft, slightly damp, lint-free microfiber cloth. That's
if it becomes scratched, is it no longer usable?
No. Huh? No, it's still usable. But Apple is giving cleaning instructions for a credit card.
Well, now I think we've jumped the elitist shark, don't you? Okay.
And on that note, moving on to skill of the month.
What we got, Shane?
Well, our farming skill of the month ended. Jamandy 52 smoked the competition, gaining 11.7 million XP in total. Second place was Jadchor with 5.1, and third place was Pernasius with 2.8. Congratulations. And I see you didn't pull off what you were going to pull off there.
I kept my powder dry because I could have done it, but at the end of the day, winning a really big prize pool was a little bit more enticing to me. So that's why I held off.
Alrighty. Congratulations, Jam Andy. You will get your bond next time I see you in game. And our next competition is crafting. This one just started less than 24 hours ago, or just more than 24 hours ago. One day in, we got Unknown Raptoid with 8,003,540 crafting XP gain. Second place, Jamandy 52 with 6.1. And third place, Jade Gizmo with 202,000 XP.
Oh, we might have a race.
Yeah, we might.
We might have a race. All right, cool.
So it's going to be interesting to watch this one. And keep in mind, this is a 7-day competition, so it'll dry up fairly quickly after this. Alrighty. We do have some achievements this week, more than last week, but not as much as Double XP Weekend, so we'll just get started with these. Starting off on the 21st, we have Jamandy 52 with 120 crafting, unsurprisingly. Dianima with 99 herb lore on the 21st. Pouncing with 99 rune crafting. Schnetz, I like saying that name, with 99 fletching. Rippeth with 99 thieving on August 20th. Zach Masta with 99 Hunter on the 20th, and Dour Matt with 99 Dungeoneering on August 19th.
We also have NL Nightmare with 99 Defense on August 18th, NL Nightmare with 99 Strength on the 18th, and NL Nightmare with 99 Magic on the 18th. Somebody was whipping some ass. We also have Jammy Jenny with 99 Construction. Oh, let's go after my own heart. August 17th.
Constitution.
Is it Constitution?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know. Easy to get those two confused.
That always tricks me. Sorry, Jammy Jenny. Constitution. Okay. We also have Lady Claw with 120 Invention on August 16th. State Bird with 99 Firemaking on August 15th. And Merowick with 99 Fletching on August 15th.
Nicely done. Well done, everyone. Good job.
Very good.
Alrighty, so time for a pick of the week, and you know this one's one that I go to a little. I go to this one a little little bit more often than not. This one's called Playground AR. It's a physics sandbox, but the best way of looking at this is that it is an augmented reality building blocks simulator. Building blocks on your iPhone. So let's just say you want to build that big tower or something to that effect. You can build it. So, you know, I'm sure we all remember back in the day we had building blocks, right? Mm-hmm. Well, this is a way of doing it without messing up your room. And, you know, this might be targeted at kids more, but, I mean, hey, who doesn't like playing with building blocks, right?
Yeah, it's fun, kind of in the Minecraft vein, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, you can save it and, you know, you can destroy it if you want. You can drop buckets of TNT to see how it goes. You can have a UFO come in and disrupt the gravity on it to see what happens. But the whole point of this is building blocks. And, I mean, it's more than building blocks. There's cars and tanks and other toys that you can put down. So just imagine anyone's room when they're a child, and you can have that in here. There's even RC toys, helicopters, and you can control all of these with AR in your phone. So it's just called Playground AR. It's $3.99 Canadian, so probably something like $1.99 US. It's one of the top-hitting AR games that always comes around. And, you know, this is going back to last year, because last year when iOS 12 came out, there was a huge focus by Apple on augmented reality on the iPhones. So when that came out, I had a severe look at what we had for augmented reality. And because of that, you'll recall that over the last year, we've had a number of these picks of the week for augmented reality. Because most of the time you look at augmented reality, it's gimmicky and whatnot. But with this, you can actually gain something around it, kind of just like Angry Birds. Because with this, you're not limited to placing things in a 2D sphere. You can just, you know, go out on your surface. You can place one thing, but if you want to place something on the other side of the table, you just have to walk around to the other side of the table and do it, because the surface is your table. So that's the benefit of augmented reality in this. And, I mean, it's still gimmicky, but it's a fun thing to play around with, just like the Angry Birds one. So that's the pick of the week, Playground AR.
How's it to control, Shane?
You definitely do need finer control for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you can get things down, but it's kind of difficult to make sure that when you, like, if you had two pillars, you make them align. It is difficult. It takes a bit of finessing. So I'm glad you asked that.
Okay.
All righty. What have we been up to this week?
A little bit of engineering. Some token farming. Ooh. And yeah, that's been about it.
All right.
Quiet week, I guess, but I mean, I've really been soaking up the summer bonanza here. Like, I'm really surprised. Like, it has actually enticed me to do the activities that week over what I would have done normally. And yeah, that doesn't happen very often. So hats off to the summer bonanza.
Yeah, that's good. For me this week, I've been doing my big game hunter, hunting for totem pieces. I am so slow with it that I'll probably fall below 10 for the clan cup. But funny story, I got my first totem at kill 48. I got the second one at 90, which was the totem of summoning. And I was thinking, oh, I'm going to be here for another 50 kills or so. But lo and behold, same session, kill 94, I get the totem of treasure. So within 100 kills, I got all three totems.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty lucky when you think about it, because they're one out of 50.
Yeah, that was definitely lucky.
Yeah.
You always have that luck.
I also went around and got all the zygomites that I was missing. I was missing around 25 of them or so. So I did that. So that's done. And you know, that effectively wraps up the bulk of what I wanted to do on Anachronia before going back to doing other things, because right before Anachronia came out, I was in the middle of making some incense sticks, and I effectively dropped that after Anachronia came out. And I actually got back to my incense sticks. I had like 600 spirit weed incense sticks that I needed to make. So I'm in the process of just putting the herbs on them now and whatnot. And then we'll probably get back to some wood cutting with that. But of course, also mention some dungeoneering thrown in there too for the tokens and the like. So taking advantage of that, mainly as a social experience, because, you know, I don't like dungeoneering, but I can do it if I'm doing it with friends, and I just do it because they need the floors, and I don't really care about much else aside from it inside dungeoneering. So, but I believe that's it. I don't think there's much else that needs to be said at the moment. No, I believe we're good. So we'll be back next week for another episode of RSPNB Update. And if, of course, you want to join us in game, we're at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. You can find full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And we do have a new edition this week. We do have a brand new shiny subscribe page where you can subscribe to the podcast on any number of podcast listeners out there. Just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. We have links to all of the big ones there. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, practically anything under the sun. Update.rsbnb.com/subscribe if you haven't already. And with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
See ya.